Public Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Command Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles. Dave,
yo.
On a scale of 1 to 14, how confident are you in America after watching the presidential debate?
Yes.
Yes.
Is that an acceptable answer?
Yeah, sure. That's fine. We don't have to get political. But
I mean, did anybody expect anything different?
Oh, I expected a little different.
I thought the only surprise was that Trump didn't like kind of do his normal off the rails.
No,
you know, name calling.
Right. Don't act like, I know you're swing. Let's not act like children.
Highlight of the debate right there. Like
them talking about like, hey, when I'm in office, I get my golf score like way lower.
Or like who could beat who at golf?
Yeah, I know. It's like, come on, guys.
And I don't doubt that Biden used to like probably be able to play well. But I don't even know if he can lift his hands above his head anymore. Like much less swing a golf club. Give me a break, bro.
Only if we carry our bags. Are you up for it?
Right. Like, anyway.
Yeah.
When you have someone like Donald Trump saying, let's not be childish, you know, it's like, wow.
What world are we living in?
We're in a weird place.
Yeah.
This is a weird place.
Yeah. Oh, man. Hey, but the good news is that Jesus is Lord. He is the King of the universe.
Oh.
And that is worthy of raising a glass to.
Let's do it.
Also, it's just worthy. Like, it gives you so much peace. As a Catholic, I don't know how atheists and others, like, have any sort of, like, hope or peace.
Bro, I talk about that sometimes, especially with certain clients of mine who I know are Christian, faithful people, about how when moments in life, and everybody has them, everybody has many of these, you know, where you're just really stressed out. I feel like, Adam, you're probably going through one of these moments right now, you know, like trying to move and starting a bit, you know, like starting a, like some like projects. And
yeah.
I feel like you just have a lot going on, very stressed out.
I think I'm handling
it. Yeah, you are. And it's like, actually, now that I think about it again, that's probably not the best example because a lot of the things you're doing, they're all like exciting. It's when you have like things that,
and
like
I'm handling it pretty well. Like I
you are. I was actually a better example though is like when you're like losing your job or when you don't how things are going to work out.
I don't drink until 2 now. So like
things, which is admirable.
Yeah.
It is. But
obviously I'm joking.
In those moments, yeah, where if you don't have faith in the Lord, because I tell you what, I take a lot of solace knowing that, you know what, Jesus is like, I believe what he says. Mm-hmm. When he, you know, when he talks about, look at the flowers of the field, see what, you know, this, how the splendor that they're clothed with, and how all the birds in the air, how well, you know, like, and your heavenly Father loves you even more. He's going to take care of you. It's like, I remind myself, I really believe that,
mm-hmm.
that the Lord is actually going to take care of me, not just in like spiritual ways, but in physical ways, you know, that he's going to provide the things that I need. And like, man, that just brings me a lot of consolation. And so I've had this moment of thinking, it's like, gosh, what would I do? I would be a wreck
Oh,
if
yeah.
I didn't have faith
right
in those moments.
Yeah. And because that faith provides hope. And like, if you're hopeless, like it's very hard to come up with things to live for.
Yeah. And then, you know, when your job is stressful, or if the only thing it's for is just like to buy a boat.
Right.
It's like, you know what? I'm not doing this. Check me out.
Right.
You know, like if it's just material stuff and you're working so hard just to get what? A boat, you know, like, or maybe a better boat. I don't know.
Golf swing.
What are you? I just, you know what? I don't, it's actually kind of amazing that so many of those people persevere.
I know.
The way they do.
It's just a testament of God's love, infinite love.
It's something.
Yeah. Hey, so tonight we're going to drink a whiskey that I've been really looking for. We purchased this whiskey, I would say, a month ago. And I have been itching to crack this bottle open. It's Lagavulin's Nick Offerman Edition Caribbean Rum Cask 11-year Scotch.
Ooh. It smells like rum.
And I think it's aged in rum cask for like 8 months.
I can smell it.
So at the end. So let's try it. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. Also,
can you smell it?
Yeah. Yes. So a couple things that I want to make sure that we touch base on. Public, as we enter into the political time periods, we did a episode a while back called with Dr. Cutterback on public discourse. And I think that's a really good episode to go back and listen to before, as we enter into the political season. Also, if you're looking to increase like your knowledge on the five ways of Aquinas or anything like that, we offer a course with Carlo Broussard, who's a Catholic interest apologist. If you go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow, I think $10 or more a month, you get access to it. And we have like a fitness course with Pat Flynn.
And that five ways course, it was excellent.
And it's like 17 hours. So it's like, we go in depth, we go deep into it.
Yeah. Yeah, we really do. But it also comes with study guides that really simplify everything.
Yep.
And it was, if you want to know, when I was done with that, I mean, like, and the thing is, I listen to audiobooks that are way longer than that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that might sound like a lot, but it really isn't. And when we were done, I was like, you know what? I now understand the five ways. And I felt really good about it.
Yeah. I actually would like to go back and re-listen to it. I probably will do that at some point.
I would like to do that too.
Yeah. This whiskey is...
It's phenomenal.
It hits.
I mean, it does.
It's a banger.
Yeah. I really love the rum flavor.
It has like the spicy of rum.
Yeah. I wonder what kind of rum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good though. I'm excited to get to know it a little bit better.
It's I think this is the most, you know, there's several Lagavulin varieties out there. This one I think is the most interesting.
This one is not the flavor profile that normally you would expect a Lagavulin to be.
You know, the other ones still taste like Lagavulin.
Right.
And knowing that it's Lagavulin, it's like, okay, yeah. But if it was a blind taste test, I wouldn't have just immediately said, oh, that's Lagavulin, which all of the others, I would definitely instantly have said, oh, well, because Lagavulin has its own
unique,
like, I love Lagavulin so much. I wish it were like half the price. I would just drink it all the time. It's probably good that it isn't.
In moderation.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes.
But it's really good.
But yeah, so Lagavulin is fantastic. But this one is wonderful. How much was it? Do you remember?
No. I mean, it's
none of them are cheap.
No, I think it's a little over 100.
Oh,
yeah.
They're all over. Well, they're all so that's the same ballpark as the rest of them.
Yeah.
Well, do they have an 8?
They did. I don't know if they still have it. Yeah, I'm not sure.
That one may have been under $100.
Yeah, the 16 is still under 100.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
I was thinking it was more than that.
No. Anyway, so yeah, we next week, Lord willing, we will close on our house, which
congratulations,
which will be exciting. There's still a lot of moving parts, but I'm anxious to get out there and, like, you know, get to know the land.
Yeah. Lay in the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're excited about that. That'll be fun.
That is going to be exciting. I still want to see. I've only driven by it. I haven't even got a chance to, like, check it out yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as soon as we have access to it, we can
get those, like, there's these people there.
Yeah. We got to get those people out. But yeah, hopefully it'll work out. We're excited. It's been a little bit of a journey, but
so you told me just but before we started, you've already ordered chickens.
We have, yes. I don't know what really type. Haley did it. She got excited.
She's really the between the two of you, she's the chicken person.
Yes, without a doubt. I'm a big egg guy.
Yeah, exactly. I guess we should specify. We're talking about alive or dead.
Right. Yeah.
Because if it's dead, then you're the chicken person.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I cooked a bunch of them today on the grill. So.
Right.
Yeah. So she's really excited about that. So we're gonna get chickens. So we're gonna plant some orchard trees. We're gonna get chickens, and then we'll probably do bees, and that'll be the first phase.
That's good. That's good.
You know, orchard takes a long time. Bees, you don't have to really mess with. Let's just get the chickens down. That's the game plan.
Chickens are a good place to start.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. Big news in the Niles household today.
Yeah?
Very big. Some of the biggest in a long time. Pamela made a blackberry pie.
Nice.
It was amazing. We have this...
Pie or cobbler?
Pie.
Okay.
It was a blackberry pie.
Okay.
We have these absolutely incredible blackberry bushes. It's sort of on, like, the property line between me and my neighbor. They're massive. Hundreds of blackberries. Huge. And I just didn't know. I think maybe I just didn't know about blackberries. Maybe.
Wow.
I mean, I've had blackberries before. You know, I'm a regular person. I eat blackberries when you see
I have them like every week.
Do you?
Yeah.
You know, blackberries have drawbacks. Very seedy. However, I discovered when they're hot, I think that they pop more, like the juice.
Lava in your mouth.
Yeah, and for some reason you don't notice the seeds. It's weird. The other day it was very hot. We were at the blackberry bush, and we were just like eating these blackberries that were like hot in the sun. And I was about to just having my mind blown. I just couldn't stop talking about these blackberries. Anyway, Pamela made this blackberry pie today.
That's awesome.
Dude.
Epic, huh? Hey, so let's do a throwback. You want to do this? Check this out.
Okay.
Here's a man gear for the day, for the week.
You serious?
Yeah.
You serious, Clark?
Dude, how long has it been since we've done the man gear? I don't know. There are guys who are listening to this show right now have no idea what we're talking about. Yeah. So what we used to do on the show is we would have a drink, and then we would highlight a gear, and then go into the topic. After probably 4 or 5 years of the episodes, we started realizing, like, hey, we're kind of running out of gear things to say.
Yeah. It was getting forced.
Yeah. And so we kind of dropped it. Here's something that I'm going to throw out there. If you are moving, rent a pod. Put all your stuff in. So for about $500, you can get one of those pods that come to, you know, they drop it off at your house.
Like a shipping container or something.
Yeah, it's like a shipping container. You can have it for a month, so you can just slowly load things into the pod as you go. You know, so it's not a chaotic or panic of like, we got to get everything out of here.
Yeah.
Hurry. You can just, as you want to, Tetris it all in there. And then they pick it up and then drop it off to your new location. $500. Like $450 and then, you know, with tax and everything else, you know.
Yeah.
$500. Well worth it. Man gear.
It seems like that would cost, it seems like it should be more.
I agree. But it wasn't.
Like it seems like the $400 or $500 would be enough just to cover moving it. Like somebody to show up with a big truck and, move it to your next place.
That's why we did it though.
Yeah.
So there's your main gear for you. If you're looking to move or you're needing to move a bunch of things from one location to another.
Okay, now.
Okay.
Can you tie it into the topic?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to see if you could.
I didn't even think that far.
Yeah, I just wanted
because we used to try to do that as well.
I just wanted you to. Oh, I just wanted to see what you'd come up with.
No, I can. I could not. I cannot. No. Do you want to get into the topic though?
Yeah, I'm ready if you are.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be piggybacking off of like our discussion that we had last week. I just thoroughly enjoyed our conversation last week.
Yeah.
Talking about chastity, talking about the reconciliation of our senses. We're pulling from Bishop Eric Varden's book, Chastity, Reconciliation of the Senses. And
before we get going, there's a book study going on right now.
With Exodus 90.
With Exodus 90.
Yes. Yeah. So if you check out Exodus90.com, you can find it. Go to the blog section. You can find it. It's an open Google link source. So all you have to do is just click that link.
You don't have to be like a member. You don't have to have the app or be a
You don't have to
be subscribed.
Nope. It's free.
You just have to find the website.
Yeah.
Exodus90.com.
It's been really good. And the book is just like one of those books that it kind of, here's what it reminds me of. The first time I read Orthodoxy by G.K. Chesterton, I was like, yeah, this is good. This is like, it's a good book. And then the second time I read it, I was like, oh, I missed a lot that first time. This is way better than what I thought it was. Mm. And the more I sit with this book by Bishop Varden, the more I've come to appreciate it even more. And so in this section in the book, he talks about like three aspects of disordered eros. Now we did a whole episode with Deacon. I'm sorry, Deacon. Deacon Harrison Garlick on the defense of erotic love, right? And we talked about like what eros truly is, and how it is a self love, right? It's a desire to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily just sex, which is what our culture thinks about today, right?
Right. Yeah, it's really a draw, like a being drawn into beauty.
Mm-hmm. Right, and Joseph Pieper talks about it,
which is why sex gets lumped in,
right?
Because, you know, obviously there's,
of course,
I mean, there's a strong beauty element,
yeah, of course,
going
of course.
On, yeah.
So I'm going to pull from actually Deacon Garlick's. He has an article on Catholic Answers on eros, and he says eros is a self love, a need to be satisfied. Our erotic love is, as Joseph Pieper and others have taught, a desire for affirmation, a need love, and a hunger for beauty, and the ache to rest within it. Now, this is something that I think everybody can relate to, right? So think about whenever you maybe get an award at your work. And then afterwards you get recognized down the hall, you know, like, oh, Dave, I can't believe you won that.
Congratulations. Yeah.
And you're like, you feel good about it.
Hey, you really earned it, bro.
Right. Or like, you know, maybe you get recognized at the airport, or maybe, you know, like that when you meet somebody for the first time and they say like, oh yeah, man,
you're the most handsome person I've ever met.
Yeah. It's like, if I had a nickel, you know, every time I hear that, but like this, there's a desire that we have that we want to be loved, that we want to be recognized, that we want to be seen, that we desire to be loved, which is in like just in our DNA as humans, right? Is like is it better to love or to be loved? Well, it's to be loved. It's to be loved, because then you know what love is.
Well, I don't know if it's better, but it's more important anyway. You have to be loved before you can love. Yeah.
And so like there's this desire within us to want to be recognized, to want to be loved. Now how we go and fulfill those desires is what can either, like ascend us towards God, or it can, like descend us towards our lower natures, our lower appetites.
Right. Yeah. Sort of like in Genesis. Well, one thing we talked about last time was about after Adam sinned, he was no longer looking up, but he began to focus on clothing himself, and he started stooping and looking down towards the earth, you know, in this fear of his nakedness.
Right. And even Socrates, so this is what Deacon Garlic talks about as well. He says, as Socrates learns in the Symposium, which is a fantastic text. If you have not read it, I would advise reading it with other people, though, that have read it before.
I haven't read it.
Because it's one of my great shame.
I haven't read it.
I think that
I missed that time.
Yeah, man. Because I think what you
I was at, I think I was on vacation.
So he says Socrates learns in the Symposium, first awakens due to a beauty of the beloved. We are attracted to beauty, and the contours of the beloved awaken us that we may be referred to as a common eros. And this is a very much expressed in sex, right? That self-love of the lovers, their need to feel whole and affirmed, is quenched in one another, right? This is like what Adam says, at last, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, right? Therefore, sex is an expression and satisfaction of eros, but it remains only part, not the whole, of erotic love. And, you know, Pope Benedict in Deus Caritas Est, you know, talks about this as well. He really brings in the importance of like the holistic aspect of erotic love, that it actually is not obviously just sex, but that this is a sign towards, you know, the divine.
Right. It's the need to be satiated.
Right.
In the ultimate beauty, in the ultimate love, and that's a key element, is that need to be satiated in beauty, right? Or in truth, what ends up becoming the transcendentals. They all become the same in the end. And so, like the true, the good, and the beautiful end up all finding their culmination in one thing, and that's God.
In God. But obviously, so we know that the stronger appetites that we have, the easier it is for us for them to become disordered, right? That they're given to us as a gift so that we can utilize them for us to be pointed towards God, right? So like the sexual embrace is a strong and powerful expression, but it's made for us. So that way we have a better glimpse, right, for God.
Yeah.
For God. But it can also be used, you know, in a disordered way to the extreme.
Yeah, because it's such a strong desire we have.
Right.
It's easy to get mixed up in who's controlling who.
Right.
You know, who should be submitting to. So we'll be right back. We're going to keep talking about this.
Men, have you checked out Exodus 90 lately? If you've heard of Exodus 90 before, you're probably thinking cold showers and Lent. But the Exodus 90 app offers so much more. It's a daily companion to help you grow to closer to God and to become the man you want to be. This summer, I'm following along with the app's daily scriptures, reflections, and prayers. It's awesome. On the app, you can join the Enthronement to the Sacred Heart, the Exodus 90 Summer Book Club, and St. Michael's Lent, which starts August 15th and leads up to the Feast of St. Michael the Archangel on September 29th. St. Michael's Lent is an ancient tradition of prayer and fasting popularized by St. Francis in the Middle Ages that's been lost in our time. Let's bring it back. Join the men of Exodus 90 and four Carlos Martins, Catholic priest, exorcist, and host of the Exorcist Files, who will serve as our spiritual guide for St. Michael's Lent this year on the Exodus 90 app. We will awaken to invisible realities and enter into the spiritual battle that rages around us all the time. Go to exodus90.com for a 14-day free trial to the Exodus 90 app and to learn more about St. Michael's Lent. That's exodus90.com to join us for St. Michael's Lent starting August 15th.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're sipping on a little bit of this Lagavulin Nick Offerman edition, aged in Caribbean rum casks. Sorry, I said that a little delayed, but like I said, Caribbean rum, and I was like, well,
they let the whiskey swim around in the rum.
It's like, oh, okay. So we're talking about Eros. We've talked about in detail with Deacon Garlick on that episode. I highly recommend going back and looking at it. But
it really is an interesting episode to go back and check out.
Yeah. But Bishop Vardon talks about like the three aspects of disordered Eros, right? So we just before the break, we're talking about how because it's such a powerful inclination for us that it can be used to a great demise as well, right? We become slaves to it, really. It's not a freedom any longer. We become slaves to it. And he talks about this, and the three things he says, and I'll just say all three of them, and then we can talk about them. But the first one he says, erotic intoxication. Second one is violence. And the third one is pornographic, which I think is very interesting that the pornographic is the third. You'd think that would be probably the first. But let's kind of talk and maybe stair step our way into that. So erotic intoxication, like what does that mean? Like what do you like, what does that, does that ring to you? Like what do you think about?
I don't know. Just sort of, I think that's sort of like a lustful attitude, you know, like, oh, maybe just like being too preoccupied with it, not actually being lustful, like in the technical aspect, in a technical sense, you know, where you're not actually like committing adultery in the heart, as you know, as Christ says, but just maybe your thoughts, you're allowing yourself to like get worked up. I don't know, like just preoccupying your mind in a disorder is too much.
Yeah, I think
in the wrong times.
I think you are I think you're swimming all around it. So he says, like, we call the first aspect erotic intoxication. In such cases, Eros is conceived of as a force of agency that elevates human beings into an ecstasy, pushing at life's extremities. So, obviously, dopamine hits, right? You know, and like, you desire it more because, like, you realize this is, you know, you realize, like, oh, it's good to be loved. It's good to be like, have these feelings. It's good to like, this feels good.
Yeah.
But
if those kinds of, if those kinds of thoughts or whatever are preoccupying you where you're unable to, you know, it's like bothering you at work, you know, where instead of thinking about what you should be thinking about, you're thinking about these other things. That's right or wrong. Whether I'm not talking about culpability here, but it would certainly be disordered,
absolutely
right. That these thoughts aren't being temperate,
right? I mean, I think a good example, there's this book out that it's become really popular. It's called The Anxious Generation. Have you heard of this book?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Have you read it?
I've only heard of it.
Okay. So in there, the author talks about like the ramifications that social media and this cell phones in general, pretty much the dopamine hits,
yeah,
that like the ramifications that it's having on our children and teenagers and young adults that we, you know, we're just not even, no one is talking about, right? And how young girls are having anxiety attacks and all these things because when they look at Instagram, they see girls that are either prettier than them, I don't know, slimmer than them, whatever it is that makes them like want to be more like that person. And then it's like, well, look at me, I can't do that. You know, anyway, there's these like huge self worth issues,
yeah,
that are happening from girls, right? But yet the dopamine hits of looking at it and seeing it over and over again is keeping them hooked on looking at them and comparing themselves to these girls, and you know, like, which only causes a bigger vortex of tragedy, really, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Of them falling into maybe despair or depression or, you know, whatever it is. And there's different ways with the guys as well. And so, like, I guess I say that as just as an example that you could see, because there's such strong dopamine hits with social media and the effects that it's had on that, imagine more so even with, you know, our sexual appetites, that the more, like, and you know, the porn companies obviously have figured this out to the nth degree, mm-hmm, right? That the sooner that they can get these kids, you know, to watch porn, the longer that they're there.
Yeah, the stronger the addiction will be. Yeah, if they can get it started, if they can get them exposed when they're young, before they have an understanding,
mm-hmm,
of what it is that they're seeing, like the imagination and wonder of like a 9-year-old,
mm-hmm,
you know, and like they don't understand, you know, they're not going to be able to understand and comprehend what it is they're looking at, and but it's still, it even at that age, they're still attracted. They know it's attractive,
right? Right?
And they don't understand that it's, they don't understand the problems, right? Yeah, so the better customer that person is going to be. So yeah, they definitely want and try to promote that.
Well, and it becomes, again, it goes back to, you become more animalistic, right? Because you become, yeah, so intoxicated with it that you lose a lot of your reason, because your will has just like been caved to all of your appetites.
And like really our sexual appetite is unique among all of who we are as a person. I mean, these are like, it's almost like the nuclear engine of us as humanity. The very first thing that humanity is called to in the Bible, the very first commandment given to us is to be fruitful and multiply, mm-hmm, right? And our sexuality is given to us so that we might fulfill that obligation, that we might be fruitful, that we might be fecund.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's no wonder that we feel this, you know, like
this strong desire
to do it, right? And so it is so ingrained into who we are that when we get it wrong, the consequences are profound. It's all wrapped up. And it's so obvious today to see how things can go wrong. Because it's so wrapped up in what our identity, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Who we are, how do we view ourselves, right? I mean, and so this has to be, it's just important to do it right and to have, engage your reason, right? And to be, another episode we did that was really good. We keep talking about our old episodes, watchfulness. But yeah, we did an episode on watchfulness. To have this watchfulness over your own
imagination. It's really custody.
Imagination.
Custody of the eyes.
Custody of the eyes. But also the, you know, like, all right, I'm thinking, what am I thinking about?
Right.
Everything about it.
Yeah. He goes on to say, like, Eros, be it through high art, touches depths in us for which we have no words. And this is very, like, I resonate with this a lot.
Through high art, is it what
through
you said?
High art, yeah. You know, like, when we sing Alleluia at Easter, you know, like you can't explain
the feeling
that you hit that you have.
I don't know about other people. I'm singing it like top of my like
as loud as
I'm like over there belting it.
If the music got cut,
I feel bad for the person in front of me because like look, you are about to hear me sing.
Yeah. Or you know, like when a poem really strikes, like when Dana Joya's poem that we, you know, first the summer storm.
Yeah.
Like that was like for me, that was the first time.
Both of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was also the same for me. Like that was the first time I ever heard a poem that like moved me.
Right.
And it's a great poem. It's like now I wouldn't say like, oh, that's the best poem. It is a great poem. I think people should. Yeah. I think people should go out and read it and hear it. But it was for me, and I think you too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the first time I ever heard a poem, it was like I could feel
that moved your senses.
Like,
yeah,
like my soul responded
right
to the beauty of that poem.
Right. And so he goes and say it calls forth a sacrificial impulse, of which we may not be aware. Except in the darkness of night, it matters to resolve freely in advance in the light of day, at which altar we wish to perform it. So, like, to me that...
Say that last part again.
At the... so it says... I'll just read it again. It calls forth a sacrificial impulse of which we may not be aware. Except in the darkness of night, it matters to resolve freely in advance in the light of day, at which altar... we wish to perform it. So, like, what are we sacrificing?
Yeah.
Right?
And don't... Okay, yeah, I had to think about that because it's in the night when you'll be swayed.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have thought about this in advance. This We've talked about this before.
Right.
Like, oh, man, that situation happened, and the thing was I never really thought about what I ought to do.
Right.
That situation happened. And so I was caught off guard, and I kind of froze a little bit.
And I made a bad decision.
And it's like, I wish I had done something, and right. I didn't. It's like, next time,
right.
if that exact situation happens again, it's like, yeah, so having decided in advance, who am I? What kind of man am I?
Right.
How do I behave? What do I stand for? Right. Having, like, just kind of thought about it in your head and decided.
Because, like,
it really helps when the time comes. I don't have to think about it now because there's often not time to think,
right. Especially in the
moment.
As we're talking about erotic intoxication.
Yes, right.
Like
something that actually kind of like prevents good thinking.
Right, at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we get back from this break, I want to talk about the violence that he talks about as a second point. Because I think there's two facets to this. The very clear, you know, rage... anger, wrath, violence that comes about, but also
yeah.
I think violence that is done to our imagination, our memory,
totally
how we see other people.
Oh, dude. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. Nobody else is here. We didn't mention that.
Oh, yeah. Jim's not here.
We are recording this on the solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul. That's kind of cool.
St. Paul is my confirmation saint.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
St. Peter is my Elizabeth, my daughter Elizabeth. She took Peter as her confirmation saint.
Which interesting.
I really dig. Like when she told me, like, I want to take Peter, I was like, yes, you should. Like...
that is very, I would not have guessed that from her.
Yeah. And she was very, like, when she came to me, she was very resolved. Like,
it's like, oh.
Really? And it was like, I'm going to take Peter. And she, like, felt, it was like, confident. And I was like, oh, yes. You know, I almost took Peter as my confirmation saint.
Really?
I went with St. Michael. Can't go wrong.
No.
You can't go wrong. But it's interesting. Both my oldest two daughters who are both confirmed, Elizabeth, she took Peter, and Mary took Carlo Acutis.
Yeah.
So they both took male saints.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, I had this is a sidebar. Don't let me forget to talk about this after the show.
Okay.
But I had an opportunity to talk with Father Carlos Martins this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if you know who he is.
He's the relic guy?
Yeah, the relic guy. Also an exorcist.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of only two, like, forget his title, but he, like, two priests in the world who go around with all these relics.
Right.
Like, then that's their job.
Right.
That's their priest.
He was talking about Sam Michael. It was pretty sweet. Like, he's giving me some cool insights. Anyway, so we're talking about,
he's come through Tulsa a number of times.
Yes.
He must like us.
Well, he's really good friends with Bishop Slattery and Monsignor Brankin.
That's right. I do recall that.
Yeah. So we're talking about three aspects of disordered eros. The second one, so we talked about erotic intoxication, which I think we did an okay job at. violence is what...
One point on erotic intoxication.
Okay.
It is a very, like, emotional, like, you feel a lot of feelings, right?
Right.
And so the same, we teach this with kids, you know, about... one of the things we teach our little kids is, you know, if you ever see, you know, we talk about good pictures and bad pictures. Because children these days, they just need to, it's not something you can't not talk about.
Right.
Okay. Even if you have like a great homeschooling community and you think you have this great bubble, which is excellent, it's still something you need to talk about. Right. And so, like, we teach them to, you know, if you see bad, you know, pictures, you know, to name it. You have to say that's pornography, or that's, you know, like, depending on the age of your kid, you talk, right. You know, give it. But what that does is it engages the rational brain. Okay, because in that moment, the first time a little boy sees a picture of, a pornographic picture, mm-hmm. there is a very emotional, powerful, like their brain is just like,
yeah.
overwhelming.
Right.
So what they need to be able to do is re-engage the rational brain,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so, but I bring that up because the same is true for us as adults.
Of course.
In those moments when, you know, like, temptation is heavy, to obviously turn to prayer, so, you know, you need to, like, address this on a natural and a spiritual level. So on the natural level, we need to think. And one of the things, you know, we've talked about before in the discernment of the spirits is become yourself reflecting upon yourself. Actually name it. Say it to yourself. Hey, I understand I'm being tempted to do something right now.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, is this a temptation? Like, you know, once again, pull yourself back and give yourself a 20-foot view.
Right.
And that is very helpful. And then also that's a good reminder to, like, oh yeah, you know what? I should pray.
Yeah.
And things become simpler when you, like, hang on. Let's take a step back and take a look at this. You know, in the moment when you're feeling these things, you know, it's like, oh.
It's hard to engage your right. rational brain.
And then you step back and you look at it. If you can remember to do that, it's hard to do. But then you're just like, you know what? This is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to get back to my work.
Mm-hmm.
This is due by the end of the day.
Yeah. I got to get things done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
Sidebar.
I think that's a good point. But he talks about violence, and obviously, you know, there's this strong connection with violence and, you know, a disordered of eros, right? A lot of times, there are triggers that lead you towards disordered eros, right? Whether that be you're hungry, you're tired, you're sleepy, or tired and sleepy, the same thing. Hungry, tired, lonely, or sometimes even angry.
Yeah, forget there's an acronym.
Yeah.
Like, don't drink when you're...
Whatever it is.
Yeah. I'll think of it later.
But there's a strong correlation between, you know, men who become angry.
Halt. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired.
So I actually said...
You got them all. I was sitting, it's like, I feel like he said them all. Let me just put them in different orders.
Yeah.
Laugh? That doesn't sound right.
So I mean, like, there's obviously a connection here, and why is that? Because it's this, I think this is just my opinion, I don't know, go talk to a Dominican about this, but I like, in my opinion, it's like wrath, anger is one of the strongest powers in your irascible appetites, passions, right? And your concupiscible appetites, your sexual desire is probably the strongest passion within that realm.
Mm-hmm.
And so because those two are the highest like passions within those appetites, it makes sense that both of those things
go together. Yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts there?
No, I agree. And they do go. I know that they do go together.
Yeah.
Like people who don't have their sexual appetites under control also very, very likely don't have their like anger under control.
Right.
That those two things, they tend to be bred from the same cloth, you know, and also you're eating appetites
and the eating and drinking and things like that, that makes sense because those, you know, those are part of your concupiscible appetites, right? So like they're just a lower level of those. So obviously if your higher level concupiscible appetites are out of control, your lower level ones are most likely going to be out of control as well.
Right.
That makes sense. I just don't know about the, you know, the bridge between the highest between irascible and concupiscible. You know, concupiscible just meaning like, you know, your sensible passions, your sensible objects. It's like a simple inclination with respect to sensible objects.
Like your senses.
Yeah. Irascible appetites, inclinations to the virtue of arduous objects, things like your will or your desire to fight, your desire to, you know, engage in rage, like, you know, just anger and and things like that. Anyway, I there's a clear connection between those two and violence.
I liked what you mentioned earlier about violence to the appetite or to the imagination.
Yeah, so I think that there's violence to like the memory.
Yes.
And violence to the imagination.
Right.
And violence in the way you see other people. And so what I mean by that is like memory, as we've talked about before on the show, is memory is an actual sub virtue of prudence, right? That you can recall things that are good. To make prudent decisions. Now, what happens is that, you know, the devil cannot create anything. The demons cannot create anything, but they can disorder things of which have already been created. The devil cannot put something into your memory that you've never thought of before. However, you've seen something or thought of something before, he can take that and disorder it.
Well, he might be able to propose an idea. But he's not going to be able to, like, not the same. If you have images in your head, he can bring those images back. He can propose those real images back. You know, if you had never looked at pornography, the devil can't put pornographic images in your head. Okay. And that's what you mean about he can't create things, right? Yeah. He could, like, put the idea, you know, he could propose things, you know, but with the memory specifically, you know, we have visual memories. We have images, especially I think for men, we tend to be, you know, very visual. And I think, you know, this is something that's like, even if this is a vice that you have long left in your past. Occasionally, some of these old images, you know, you end up confronting them again.
Right. Yeah. Which does damage to your imagination as well, right?
Well, that is the damage, right? It's like here you are going about your day, and now all of a sudden you're being like forced to deal with this old a vice. That, you know, maybe you actually don't have as a vice anymore, but the scars from this old vice, they're still very present in your mind and in your memory. And of course, that is going to impact your imagination because you might have been sitting here thinking about something in like maybe pondering something good, but maybe something about it, you know, in your train of thought all of a sudden trailed over here. Kind of slipped into this old, once again, like a scar that pulled you in this bad direction. If that wasn't there, you might have continued going and pondering something, whatever it is, you know?
Which is also like how you can view people.
It's just like that. Right. Exactly. The way we view, our relationships. Mm-hmm. I mean, because all of that is going to impact the way we view another person. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And so the last one he's talking about is pornographic, which is... the clear one, which we're out of time on Catholic Radio. I highly recommend go checking it, the rest of this episode out, because he makes this very interesting observation on a Greek word. He's talking about a faceless one and the relationship there that I do want to talk about. So go check us out on thecatholicmanshow.com. Thank you to all the Catholic radio stations that carry The Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
So he talks about how the pornographic eros is unilateral. Right? That it's one. It has no encounter in view, only self-indulgence. That it's rooted in a consumeristic mindset. It slots easy into the logic by which our society works today. That, like, it's no longer that we were made in the image and likeness of God, but that we're just, like, literally consuming this as an object.
Right. Let's pause here for a second.
Sure.
And just talk about, let's think about the difference between a womanizer and a pornography user. Okay?
Okay.
Because it's easy to sit there and think, oh, well, both of them are kind of doing the same thing. But really, the guy who's looking at pornography, at least he's not like, hurt, like the womanizer, he's like lying to these women and then like leaving them, they never hear from him again. And he's like hurting all these poor women out there who, had other expectations, and all of that may be true.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that you can say that the womanizer is worse than the pornographer, pornography viewer, because at least the person who's going out, in our example here, the womanizer, at least he's having to make real encounters with people where he's still having to treat this person in many ways, certainly not fully, but as a person. Right, he's still having to engage them in dialogue. He's having to have a give and take, between two people and because it's not like, oh, do you see what I'm saying?
No, I totally, yeah.
I'm not expressing this in totally the right way, but the guy who's looking at pornography, he does nothing for this woman. He has made zero.
It's a one less step in realism.
He maybe paid a few dollars. Okay, he paid like a little bit of money, maybe even not, right? But he gave nothing.
Right.
And so I just think that the damage is greater in pornography because
it's one step removed from more so reality.
Yes. And the consequence, the in the back of your mind, the consequence that happens over time, I think is substantial.
Yeah.
Right. And it's obviously more degrading.
Yeah. And I mean, so this is what Bishop Barton talks about. He talks about so the Greek word for person is prosopon or prosopon, something like that. But in antiquity, a negated form of this noun was used as a synonym for slave. And it's aprosopon.
Aprosopon.
Yeah. Which is literally a faceless one.
Hmm.
So a slave in that time period was literally like a faceless person.
Interesting.
One in which had no identity as a human.
You're not a person. Yeah. You're just a tool.
It was just merchandise.
Yeah.
It was just like a consumer.
Isn't that funny that they were already like they were kind of admitting the evils of slavery?
Yeah.
Then,
right?
It's like, oh, this is a dehumanizing thing.
But this goes to show, obviously in porn, right? Is that like because you become slave to these passions, you become and like you end up, you're not seeing somebody else. It's digital pixels, right? It's like it's a faceless consumeristic aspect.
Yeah. Well, this is something that John Paul II talked about in his Theology of the Body's Wednesday audience address. He at least alluded to this about how the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is lust. where you know where you're willing the good of the other. Hatred is not the opposite of that. Like hatred is like wanting to kill somebody. The opposite of love, where you're willing the good of them, is like where you're just trying to empty them, where you're actually depriving them of their goodness. You're reducing their goodness to nothing.
To nothing.
You're not trying to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually something. That's a different species mm-hmm. of thing. The opposite of love is lust.
Right. Yeah. Which is very. I mean, I just found that to be very interesting. That the correlation there of the Greek word for person.
Yeah.
And what they used for as a slave, meaning I like a faceless person. And the relationship that it has to the pornographic.
I should learn Greek. I should do that.
Dude, you should start, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, like I don't know. Like I don't really have a whole lot more. I found that these aspects of disordered eros was very interesting, and it kind of piggybacked off of our last topic, but like because of like this idea of this erotic intoxication, that in which like it just consumes you and to the point where you cannot rationalize, like have like real reason or thoughts, just like you know, whenever you're drunk or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and then like the things that could happen to the violence that it does to the human person through not only anger and wrath, but through the imagination and through your memory and the way you view other people and how you see your senses are violated literally.
Mm-hmm.
Where you don't see reality for what it truly is, how God wants you to see it. And then also, like, obviously the pornographic aspect of this, to where it becomes a consumeristic mentality of that I don't will the good for you, but I desire to just take from you. And at the beginning of this episode, we talked about, you know, that there's this strong desire to be loved.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I'm just going to throw this at you. This is kind of a unprepared, I think, tough question. I'm okay. You know, obviously when a person is, you know, looking at pornography, they're devaluing this other person.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you're like letting yourself be thrown into this erotic intoxication,
mm-hmm.
you have to be willing to like devalue this other person. Do you think before you do that, you first have to devalue yourself? Like, do you think I was just sitting here wondering, you first have to discount your own goodness in order to let yourself, because what you're doing is you are also failing to live up yourself to, you know, you're becoming like mm-hmm. an animal.
Right.
Okay. So it seems like in the process of this erotic intoxication, actually the very first thing and the first problem is that you lower yourself first, which allows you, because if you were to keep yourself at like, oh no, because you have a certain dignity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's below your dignity to look at another person that way, okay? It's also below their dignity to be looked at that way,
right.
But it's also below your dignity to do it in the first place. So the first thing you have to do is bring yourself down to a place that's below your own dignity. And then it's like, okay, now that you're down here, it's almost like you're dragging everybody else with you. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's just what sin is.
I've never really thought about that process, you know, and how yeah. like actually the very first person harmed is yourself, in allowing mm-hmm. yourself to even begin the process.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's...
I really just wanted to run that by you.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're off. I think that's what sin is.
Yeah.
Now, there's a justice act, there's a social aspect to sin. Now, but the beginning is that you allow either your lower appetites to consume you, or you allow a lesser good to determine the things in which you're going to do.
Yeah. You first humiliate yourself.
Yeah. Now, it's very, like, it can be so small that you don't realize it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of tough part.
That's the other thing I was thinking about is, you know, this erotic intoxication. I think that's a good term. It can happen very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's just true with all vice. You know, you can spend years and years and years in a really dedicated, you know, focused way, trying to, and even let's just say you're successful rooting out specific vices in your life, whatever they are. And
through the grace of God.
Through the grace of God, obviously. But it might take years to get rid of them. It's only seconds.
It could take a lifetime.
I mean, I'm just saying, let's say you get, I mean, but it's seconds to fall back into them. Right? That that's why I was trying to bring up watchfulness earlier, that the vigilance
that you have to have.
That you have to, I mean, even if it has been years, and we talked about this last week, how you think, oh, no, that's not a problem for me anymore. I just don't struggle with that.
Right. That okay, is. Well,
you better be careful.
Yeah.
Because you think that, and next thing you know, you've been conquered by
it. I just know that I am capable of like horrendous sin, like terrible, horrendous things. The moment that I think, oh, I'm not capable of that.
Yeah. No, I'm capable. You know, man, like over the last couple weeks, I've had a couple moments in my life where I have realized that let me back up a little bit. You know, like you go through you're living the spiritual life. You're like, oh, I'm in a state of grace. And I've gone through periods in my life where it's like, okay, well, I'm in a state of grace. Therefore, like I get to go to heaven. Right. It's a mathematical equation or something.
Right, sure. Yeah.
Over the last couple of weeks, I've just had some insights into myself about just how wrong that is, and just how dependent I am on God's mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you're in a state of grace. That's great. You just had some good reflection on myself. It's like talking to myself. Oh, you're in a state of grace. Well, that's great. You suck. You know, like you might be in a state of grace because you haven't committed any you haven't killed anybody lately. You know, you haven't committed any mortal sins. But don't sit here and think that therefore you have merited heaven. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that's very easy to fall into that trap, I think.
And I've been appreciative of it. It's also been tough to deal with.
Sure. But also you have to know that, you know, you're a beloved son of God, who he desires you more so than you to be with you forever in heaven.
Yeah. It's an arc where you have this realization about how look, you're depraved. I don't mean utterly depraved. Maybe that's a bad word. I'm not Lutheran.
Okay, Calvin.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not Calvinist. But you know, you're just riddled with problems. Yeah. Okay?
Listen, you got problems.
I got problems. Yeah. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And so then it's like, oh, wow. It's like you kind of have this low feeling. But then hopefully you turn your eyes to the mercy focus on God's mercy. And then you just, you know, it ultimately becomes this great thing because it is one of the things that makes you realize and brings you back into God's ultimate mercifulness, right?
Yeah.
And how great he is.
Yeah.
And
I know,
it's just like, oh, and you just get to rest in that. You know?
One of the things that I always say, it's actually one of my sayings that I
it's one of the quotes that you quote.
Yeah. All the time.
And you can quote me on that.
That I must decrease so he may increase.
Bro.
Yeah. That is just something that
you should write.
I say
you should write that down.
Yeah,
that is good.
Yeah, John the Baptist had a thing or two, knew a thing or two.
Yeah.
Also, guy was a little crazy.
Do you know the?
He's a little crazy. He was a little crazy.
You know the very small T traditions about him?
Yes.
Can I tell them to you? Because our listeners might not.
Sure.
So you know, obviously.
I'm going to pour a glass while you do this.
Okay, good. Important guy.
One of the most.
Born to very old parents.
Right. But like, he's one of the most important guys.
Yes. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
And I have, let me just frame this. I have no idea where this small tea tradition comes from. Okay. It's just one of the things I've heard about that both of his parents died when he was like around the age of 4. And he was raised in the desert by angels. And like, that's why I'm not going to sit here and be like, and it makes so much sense, but it kind of does make a little bit of sense. Like, that's why he's out there eating locusts and stuff and wearing, and like, let's be honest, he was a weird guy.
That's what I said that already.
Well, I guess I'm agreeing with you. But yeah, I mean, like, doing weird stuff.
Yeah.
But, man, his weirdness was part of his vocation.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what, like, made people was like, hey.
What's going on with this guy?
This guy's weird.
Yeah.
And then he said some good stuff also. Like, that was unexpected.
The 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
All right, let's get off here.
Anything else?
No, I just said, hey, let's get off here.